Page 22, Philadelphia, church history. All right, Philadelphia.
Page what?
I've got page 22 in mine. I'm not sure if it's the same nearly as yours.
17.
Okay, 17, all right. Which means I have more notes than you. Okay, Philadelphia is two words in Greek. It's phila, phileo, love, brotherly love. And Delphia is brotherly, Delphos. So you say, ho, Adelphos. Hey, brother.
We stopped at church.
Hold on. We got to get up to Philadelphia, 17. Drat. We got a lot more to do. Oh, we're still going on. I hate talking about the Inquisition. I want to get on to Philadelphia. All right, fast. Hold on. Let's do this fast. The church, talking about the council and its doctrines on the church. Drat. Keep trying to go forward. The church keeps slowing, the Catholic Church keeps slowing us down. The Roman Catholic Church did not formulate the doctrines of the church until after the Reformation. Isn't that funny? Yeah. The Reformation forced them to solidify what they believe. The Tridentine Catechism defines the church as the body of all the faithful who have lived up to this time on earth with one invisible head, Christ, and one visible head, the successor of Peter, who occupies the Roman see, meaning the Pope. Do you hear the word see? See is an old word. Anybody know what it means? See. What's an Old Testament word? A seer. So when they talk about Peter and the being the Roman see, they're calling him the Roman prophet. You know what's funny? Before the Antichrist comes, there's coming somebody called the false prophet. Why people don't get this thing? The Pope is not the Antichrist. What is the Pope?
He's the false prophet. Always the false prophet.
He's the false prophet. Now, no Pope's been able to do a miracle over the last 2,000 years.
No.
But one of them's coming who will be able to do miracles. And he'll raise the Antichrist from the dead. So you get the Protestants up there constantly calling out, the Pope's the Antichrist, the Pope! No, the Pope has the spirit of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
But the Pope is the false prophet. All right? He's a different animal. Now,
Sorry, Pastor, have you ever heard the group called the Palmarians?
Palmarians, I know, but I'm sure you have. Who are they?
Give it on television the other night.
Cults.
It's like a Catholic cult, but they're separate from the Catholic Church and they have their own Pope and stuff like that, and they're like way more extreme than the real Catholics. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I was thinking maybe the false prophet might come from them or something.
No, because the false prophet, well, if he does come from anywhere, he will prove that he is to be followed by several things. One, his proof by miracles. Secondly, by his promotion, not of himself, but of a new Christ, the Antichrist. And the whole world will obey the false prophet in being turned towards the Antichrist. So he won't come, I don't think, from an obscure group, although he may. I'm not going to limit God. I don't know what God's allowing.
In probability, will he come from Rome?
The Antichrist has to be a Syrian Jew.
Syrian.
So wherever he comes from, he can live in Rome, he can live in Spain, I don't care. But he has to be half Syrian, half Jew. Look at the problems there in Syria. Look at Damascus, look at the stuff. He has to be like Judas Iscariot. He's not a true Jew. He's half Jew, half Syrian. And he can't be Spanish, he can't be English, he can't be Turkish. He has to be Syrian. Because the Antichrist is called the Assyrian. He's also Jewish. He has to be half Jew. Just because of all kinds of reasons. Judas was the first coming of the Antichrist. And he comes again when he comes out of his place. And he leads the whole world to worship. When he comes to the Antichrist, he leads the whole world against God. But the false prophet, now, see, I get my mind worried. The false prophet can probably come from anywhere. You said about this thing. I'm racing ahead in my mind. I'm sorry. False prophet may come from anywhere, but I know the Antichrist has to be half Assyrian, half Jew. So I don't know about the false prophet. I would say the false prophet also has to be Jewish, but I'm not sure. Never thought about his nationality. I just know he's connected with him. Okay, but I know he's not Muslim. He's of the Catholic stripe. Concerning the dogma of the Church, the Roman Catholic Church is visible. They say, since the Lord lived visibly, and since the church is the Lord's body, then the church too is visible. I believe that. The Roman Catholic Church has two tiered or two levels. There is the teaching church, consisting of the clergy, and a wholly dependent sense, the hearing church, the laity. Do you believe that?
No.
That is wrong. The Roman Catholic Church is bipartite. The soul of the church is the faithful, but the body of the church is the professors. Now, that may be true. I mean, in our church, you can have a bunch of people who are born again, and you have some people who are just there. So you can have two groups in one body. There are people who can be members of the church and still go straight to hell. All right, so that's okay. D, the Roman Catholic Church is the dispenser of God's grace. God's grace is imparted through the sacraments by agency of the priesthood. Do you believe that?
No.
That's a mockery of the finished work of Jesus Christ. The Roman Catholic Church is the institute of salvation. The church is viewed as Noah's Ark, outside the pale of which there is no salvation.
More like the Titanic.
It is already sunk. So that's what they taught about the church. Again, there's some truth in it, but it's mainly all crazy stuff. G. On their doctrine of the teaching of salvation, session 4, crystallized the Catholic plan of salvation. This can be outlined as followed. Faith, meanings, assent, agreement to Catholic dogma. For infants, the faith of the church stands for them. We believe for the infants. And two, grace. It's imparted initially through baptism, maintained through good works and penance. Naturally, a Roman Catholic can never have assurance of salvation because they're constantly getting bits and pieces of grace and never get the whole package. Council's decree spoke of the progressive increase in justification. What an insane. Nobody ever goes to court and gets progressive increase of justification. You're either innocent or guilty. I've been justified. He went down to his house justified, not progressively justified. Now, there were some reform decisions in the Council of Trent. Numerous reforms of the Catholic Church were made by the Council of Trent, both to remove some various obvious problems and to counter the methods of the Protestants. With this council began the moves for education and proper oversight of the priests. Most of the priests up until the Council of Trent were ignorant. They couldn't even read or write. When Bishop Bedell had the Bible translated in Irish, which I've got, they gave away hundreds of them to Catholic priests, and then they had to teach them how to read. Protestants teaching the Catholic priests how to read. When the bishops found out that the priests were learning to read in the Irish and to teach the people in Irish, they burned the Irish Bibles to stop the Catholic priests from reading them and teaching them. B, decisions included higher standards for the selection of clergy? Yes. Higher. Yeah, like the guy needs to take a bath. The guy needs to shave. The guy needs to have an education. They started increasing the standards. Restrictions limiting the appointment of crooked and incompetent men. Encouragements to appointing men of morality. It'd be nice to have a priest who has some morals.
Can I ask you a question? It says restrictions limited, so in other words, they could have a few crooked and incompetent.
I guess so. As long as they did it for the church. They fixed the lowest lay age for an ecclesiastical office of 14. Child labor. You're 13 years old, you can't be a priest yet. Next year.
So it's supposed to be able to survive that long. Did people not survive that long? So 14 would be...
It doesn't matter. The point being, to start somebody at 14 in the priesthood is pretty obnoxious. Okay.
It was a good time to brainwash them, though.
Oh, man. Oh, they started them from day one. Provision for the education of the clergy. We got to educate these guys. It's not education of the masses. We got to educate the priests. Get that. That's how bad it was in the Dark Ages. Not even the priests had education because all the money was where, Eddie? Eddie Baggio. In the churches, the temples, the cathedrals. There was no way they could afford to teach people. Instructions ordering the clergy to preach. Excuse me? We better tell the priests to preach. The Protestants were known for their preaching, so now we've got to make the priests preach. Elimination of certain corruptions, the practice of certain clergy controlling several cathedrals. They just had one priest and he would have control over all the money and income and all the works going on in cathedrals. The practice of wasteful opulence, living opulently, and the widespread practice of concubinage. What's concubinage?
Having a woman on the side.
Having lots of women on the side. A priest could not be married, but he could have a concubine. Wink, wink. For health reasons, I'm sure. Monastic reforms. Monastic reforms, they reformed monastic life, made it so that you couldn't kill somebody who wasn't obeying. Exclusion of monks from parish preaching without a license. So these guys would come along and they says you have to have some sort of control. There were some anathemas. These are famous. Canon 9 says, if anyone says that a sinner is justified by faith alone, meaning that nothing else is required to cooperate in order to obtain the grace of justification, and that it is not in any way necessary that he be prepared and disposed by action of his own will, let him be cursed. Anathema. Oh, so if you say that I'm justified by faith alone, you're damned. Canon 11, if anyone says that men are justified either by the sole imputation of the justice of Christ or by the sole remission of sins to the extent of the grace and the charity which is poured forth in their hearts by the Holy Ghost and remains in them, or also that the grace by which they are justified is only the good will of God, let him be anathema. What are they doing? They're quoting what the Protestants were preaching. They're saying, you're saying that you don't need the church. That's damnable heresy. No, it's Bible.
That's are they using anything to back it up, or are they just making it up?
Well, they use loads of things. In their, the documents, you should read the Catholic documents. They are so, you talk about debate, you talk about, we have all of the cross-references and all of the footnotes to the anti-Nicene fathers. They would quote everyone except the Bible. But they had quotes, but they had no scripture to back it up.
But doesn't the Apocrypha?
And they would use a lot of the Apocrypha. Yeah. Sure. If anyone says, Canon 12 says, if anyone says that justifying faith is nothing else than confidence in God's divine mercy, which remits sins for Christ's sake, removes it, or that it is this confidence alone that justifies us, which it is, well, let him be anathema. If anyone says that in order to obtain remission of sins is necessary for every man to believe with certainty and without any hesitation arising from his own weakness and indisposition about that his sins are forgiven him, let him be anathema. So if you say, I know that I can do nothing to get saved, I just believe Jesus saves, you're cursed. I'm putting it into the modern words, but they, legalese, they made it so that there's no way to get saved by grace through faith alone. Canon 14, if anyone says that a man is absolved from his sins and justified because he firmly believes that he is absolved and justified, or that no one is truly justified except him who believes himself justified, and that by this faith alone absolution and justification are effected, let him be anathema. If anyone says that a man who is born again and justified is bound ex fide, without faith, is justified to believe that he is certainly in the number of the predestined, let him be anathema. Without meaning that if you're born again and justified and is bound secluded just completely only by faith alone, then let him be anathema. Which I say all of these things. If any man says that the commandments of God are even for, if anyone says that the commandments of God are even for one that is justified and continued in grace impossible to observe, let him be anathema. I believe all the commandments are impossible to perfectly observe.
Yeah.
Well, you're damned. Guys, you guys are going to hell, man. If anyone says that there is no mortal sin except that of unbelief, do I say that? I'm in trouble. Or that grace once received is not lost through any other sin, however grievous and enormous, except by that of unbelief, let him be anathema. Some of these sound very complicated, but they're very simply saying, if you simply believe the only sin that can damn you is unbelief. If you believe that, or if you think, as he says here, that once you've received grace, you can't lose it, you're damned. But that's what the Protestants and the Bible believers were preaching.
That's what the argument's about, by grace alone,
faith alone. Yes. Well, it's actually five alone.
Basically against it. Well,
that's grace alone, faith alone, sola scriptura alone, God alone. There's one other one. And these were the absolutes that the Catholic says, no, you have to have the church, you have to have tradition, you have to have works, you have to have, you know, a number of things. And so the battle was engaged.
Well, Pastor, did Protestants believe that if you stop believing, then you lose your salvation, isn't it?
No, the Protestants, there are different kinds of stripes of Protestants. Again, Luther was not a Calvinist, and Luther thought you could lose it if you stopped believing. So there, not all of these are Bible, but yes, Luther thought that if you stopped believing, you could lose it. Okay? Now, Calvin says, no, you will never stop believing it. And if you did stop believing it, like me, I say, if you stop believing it, one of two things can happen. It doesn't matter. We read it there. If you, if we, Bible says, if we believe not, yet he abideth faithful. So I can stop believing and he still remains, once I've started to believe. But I also say, if you stop believing, it may be a sign you never really believed. Okay, so you need to put the fear of God back in them. You say, you know, you may not have ever gotten saved.
So they could have believed in their head, accepted their heart.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So the effects of the council, although not universally accepted, primarily it was, but not universally, the council, sorry, this is how it says in Latin, the concilium tridentilium, paramecium, amoebium. They're all unified and fortified Catholicism by providing a defined standard of faith and practice. It was not reviewed until Vatican I and Vatican II, and only by Vatican II did they actually try to adjust some things. It served as an effective counter to Protestantism with the publication of its own catechism, its own Bible, and its own missal. None of the anathemas of the Council of Trent have ever been retracted. Inquisition. It began in medieval times, reorganized in 1542 as a tool of the Counter-Reformation. Now, brief history of the Inquisition, otherwise known as the Holy Office. Had a three-stage history, the medieval Inquisition, the new Inquisition, and the Supreme Inquisition. I love how they come with these names. Medieval, initiated to eradicate the heresy of the Albigenses and the Waldenses toward the close of the 12th century. The Dominican order was the power behind the first wave of heresy. We've got some Dominicans here in Cork. Mm-hmm. They're kind of big around here. You need to remind them of their history.
Right, just quickly, I was talking to someone who was, I don't know, was in there recently, Dominican Center on the Quay, but apparently they have Buddhist statues in there. No, they're doing a bit of combo.
Listen, the Catholics have been messing around with Taoism and Buddhism and stuff to talk about meditation, yeah. Buddhist meditation that helps you. Good old Steve Jobs was a Buddhist when he died. Very popular, it's very popular. People, I've taken the kids somewhere and sat down, took them swimming one day, several years ago, they were taking lessons, and I'm sitting there. There's this woman right in front of me, man. She's reading a Catholic's Guide to Taoist Meditation. Like, what?
Yeah.
Man, just a smorgasbord of whatever you want to believe. Just be a Catholic still. She didn't take a track. I don't understand it, you know?
That's how they hold it as well. You believe whatever you want, so long as you subscribe to being
Catholic. That's what Daly said, man. Daly got on. I remember him being on an interview one time on a Saturday morning. Not Saturday morning, on a weekday afternoon. What's his name? Kind of a jovially guy in the afternoon, 3 o'clock. Anyway, he was interviewing, and they were interviewing all these people who were upset with the Catholic Church. And Daly, Cardinal Daly, got up there, and he just sat in the back, and he says, guys, you can believe anything you want, just stay in the Catholic Church. Everybody went, But that's their whole thing. Just as long as you're baptized and you just stay a Catholic, you'll be fine.
We just want your money.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. More New Inquisition. Otherwise known as the Spanish Inquisition. This stage was working. I'll ask you, what was the New Inquisition also known as? It's known as the Spanish Inquisition. This stage was organized in 1481. It was a brutal, sadistic Dominican, Thomas de Torquemada. He's not a nice guy. He was its first inquisitor general, and the Spanish Inquisition was noted for its terror. I mean, directed first against Jews. Hey, Jews fit those anathemas. There are plenty of anathemas against the Jews.
Yeah.
Then Protestants, and then the Moors. Who are the Moors?
Islam.
Mm-hmm. All over southern Spain. They talk about Moorish designs and the effect of the Moors. Those are the Islamic immigrants into Spain. It is said that Torquemada directed the incineration of 10,220 persons for the glory of God during his 18 years as Grand Inquisitor. So Hitler took his cue not from his own desire to burn Jews. He took his cue from the Inquisition. The Spanish monarch supported the Inquisition as a means of consolidating their political fortunes, because whenever you burn somebody, you grab their houses, their lands, you took it as part of the government. They're still doing it today. The government still have too much power, I believe with all my heart. I believe our federalist drive as Europe is to take away property, man. We're losing rights, we're losing everything. And people go to jail for exposing them and saying, this is going too far. The Supreme Inquisition, urged by Cardinal Carafa and modeled after the Spanish Inquisition, this stage was constituted, began in 1542 as part of the Counter-Reformation. Later, as Pope Paul IV, Carafa became the driving force of the Inquisition. He published his famous Index. It's a list of publications forbidden by Roman Catholics to read. Guess what was on the Index and added in 1611? Actually, it was added when William Tyndale wrote his. And it was added when John Wycliffe wrote his. It was added when John Rogers wrote his. Guess what was on the index?
The Bible.
Any Bible not sanctioned by the imprimatur of Rome.
Wow.
It's on the index. You can't read it. D, the Jesuits. Jesuits were also squarely behind the use of the inquisitorial powers. The Inquisition in Italy. Let's just quickly go through. Six cardinals were appointed as inquisitor generals in Italy. Their work was swift and ruthless, and in short order, most Protestants had been forced to flee the country. The Waldensians, who had covered the countryside, were now living up in the Alps in northern Italy. One notable victim of the Italian Inquisition in later years was the scientist Galileo Galilei. Hmm. Oh, Pope John Paul II got up there and finally apologized for being rude and excommunicating him because he believed that not everybody. The Inquisition in Spain, this began in 1559 as a continuation of the new Inquisition. By 1570, Protestantism was eliminated. And to this day, you go to Spain and guess what it is? Catholic, Catholic, Catholic. I got a friend who started a church in Sevilla, and he started another church down in Malaga. And it's tough, man. It's tough because the Inquisition just eradicated any That's type of desire mean. For the Bible.
I'm married to Sevilla.
Yeah? Well, Seville. Seville was heavy Inquisition place. So that makes sense that that's where they would hold up.
That's a big walled compound.
You ought to watch. We have a video put out by Bob Jones University called... it's got the guy. It's,
Flame in the Wind, is it?
Flame in the Wind. Thank you. That's a good film to watch. Give you a little bit of a taste of the struggle, and it was just very dangerous. And Seville was a hotbed of the Inquisition. Both stages of the Inquisition in Spain had the effect of shutting the country down, putting perhaps the most enterprising of nations out of mainstream European civilization in the name of religion. No wonder we have a bad name. No wonder we have such a bad name, because religion only destroys, and we're not religious. In reality, it established a new Dark Ages, which remains even to this day. The methods of the Inquisition, people were arrested on the mere suspicion of heresy. All you had to do was, that's why I don't... I constantly apply biblical truths to justice and to the legal system. But nobody should be able to, like they did, there was some nurse over in England, they accused of doing something to some, maybe poisoning some... some and her name was published in the newspapers, and she was ruined for trying to clear her name. Yeah, and I... Freedom of the press does not mean the freedom to libel and slander without proof. Mm-hmm. And that the newspapers should be shut down, not just fined. When they I don't care if it's a Johnny on the street, I don't care if it's the smallest life, if you ruin their life because of an accusation, mm-hmm. I think it ought to destroy that organization. Because under the Inquisition, all they had to do was just say, you're a heretic. From that moment, you had to prove your innocence.
You were guilty until,
and it's still that way in France, you are guilty until proven innocent. And in the Western world, you are innocent. And all you have to do is stand up and not say a word, just as Jesus didn't say a word when he was being accused. Art thou the Son of the Blessed? He just stood there quietly. He didn't have to incriminate himself. And yet you'll get some guard who says, your silence is telling us right now you're guilty. You just look at him and go, I do not have to answer you. If you think I am wrong, you prove it. Mm. I am right.
Is that the Fifth Amendment?
That is in America.
Yeah,
but even here, there's no amendment.
By not speaking.
Here, they will force you. They will say, if you do not answer, that's why you're guilty here until proven innocent. If you do not answer, we will take that as a guilty. And that is wrong. By just the Bible and just by human nature. Mm. Somebody cannot accuse you and destroy your life. You have to have proof. So nobody can make you confess to a crime. That's how come they evaluate, how did the Garda extract this confession? Because they could beat you senseless. Yeah, I did that. Flying right here. See, he signed it. He says he's guilty. You can't do that. It's a basic fundamental right. That's from the Bible. All right. So I have deep-seated animosity against the modern concept of justice because I've seen the Inquisition. I've seen how it's being abused, and I see the Inquisition today. They just, all you have to do is just, he looks bad. He looks evil. That's how they vote. They go, I like Norris. Oh, I like McGinnis. And they just vote on appearances. Mm-hmm. Oh, he doesn't look right. No. The methods of Inquisition, all you had to do was, you were arrested on the mere suspicion of heresy. Then subjected to the most outrageous judicial processes the world has ever seen. It was not only a case of guilty until proven innocent, but it was often a matter of guilty regardless. You know, understand this. Watch this. If you're accused, Lisa, let's say you're accused of being a witch.
Okay.
And that was easy. I mean, they just say, you know, blondes are most likely to be witches.
That's just like,
everybody, it's called guilt by association. We know that all the witches we've been collecting lately are blonde. Not natural. Look at the roots. But the idea is this, all right? You then had one of two choices, okay? Either you were going to die as a witch unrepentant, or you were going to die as a repentant witch. Which one do you want to be? Once they accused you, you are guilty either way. That was the Inquisition. It is so grieving to read this stuff when you read the past and the justice that was meted out to countless millions. They were guilty, and they either had one or two choices. Either die stubbornly as guilty, or repent and then be killed mercifully. We'll slit your throat before we burn you, so that you don't feel the pain of the burning. Or we'll go burn you and watch you scream and writhe. But either way, you're guilty.
I thought you could state, if you stated three people, and if one of them was the one of the people who accused you, then you weren't.
Say again?
You know, if someone accused you, but if you've, I think it was three people, if you can state, if you write three people you think accused you, and if one of them was the person who accused you, you got it off.
Mm-mm. Yeah. I never heard of that. You're going to have to prove it to me. There may be slight exceptions, but generally, once you're accused, you're guilty.
That was from Catholic background.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, watch this. The justification for such methods is interesting to note. In his address to Pope Paul V, it was said, Blessed Father, the ministry of Peter is twofold. Feed and kill. For the Lord said to him, Feed my sheep, and has also heard a voice from heaven saying, Kill and eat. You see how you can abuse Scripture?
Yeah.
Feed them and kill them. To feed sheep is to take care of obedient, faithful Christians. But when he has no longer to do with the sheep and lambs, but with lions, Peter is commanded to kill them. Obtaining a conviction. Witnesses were used. Almost everyone was qualified to testify against the accused, including liars, criminals, perjurers. What did they do with Jesus? They went and they got
witnesses for
anybody. They paid them. They said, can you please? What did they do with Nabal? With the vineyard. Ahab wanted the vineyard. And Jezebel went and got some, what they call the sons of Belial. We call them demon-possessed men. Sons of Belial. These were they're falling in the mouth. They go and they slit their wrists. Hey, come here. Would you just say he's a bad guy? Sure. He's of the devil. I mean, that's all they had to do. And they took Nabal and they stoned him. Gave the land to the king. Witnesses. The names of witnesses were kept secret. So yes, maybe if you could prove that you're an accuser. But I never heard of that. And the accused was not permitted to confront them. If somebody accuses me of doing something, I should have the right to see them face off and let them accuse me to my face and me being able to present questions back to them to say, can you prove this? That's why they talk about facing your accuser. It should not be secret. You shouldn't just stand trial and you don't know who's accusing you. Advocacy. Arch heretics were not permitted to a lawyer. Lesser cases may have been given an advocate, but he was effectively working for the prosecution. He just, you know, was on your side only to be there, not to help you. Confessions. Torture usually was the best way to get you to confess. The most common method of extracting a confession was torture. It was during these reigns of terror when such things as the rack and thumb screws were invented. Did you ever hear thumb screws? Mm-hmm. Well, you ought to go. Yeah, we've been to Spain. You ought to go there and look in there. They got museums to the torture chambers. You don't take your children. They have naked women, mannequins standing up there. They have men who have been dismembered and are still alive. These things are gory. I mean, you couldn't make them. You couldn't make a movie at this stuff. You're just walking in there, and you see they have women who are being impaled while alive. You know what impaled means? Rods being stuck up their bodies while they're alive and left there until they confess. That was a religious, loving, Bible-teaching religion, wasn't it? Just like they say about the Muslims. It's a peace-loving religion. I've heard that before. That's what they said about the Catholic Church. It's not a peace-loving religion at all. So you see those chambers, and you see that they use those tortures not to punish, but to extract a confession. Do you think that if somebody took your thumbs, placed them into a vice grip, and began to crush your thumbs, you think you'd start saying, I did it! Yes, you would.
And could they still at the same
time? Oh, then they would take you away and they would kill you. Yeah, as long as they got you to sign, if you could. Sign. Deception. Often the inquisitor would extract confessions by extending false hope or by leading the prisoner to believe certain things which were not so. Like, well, your partner there, he's already confessed. That's what they do today. If you're ever taken by the Garda Inn and you had a friend and they say, well, your friend told us that you did it. You, I'm going to tell you right now, do not believe them. Do not go with them. I don't care what, if your pastor has already confessed that you did such and such. So you need to confess. You don't need to say anything. I'm now in my aggressive mode. Because they'll lie to get you to believe, well, maybe I did it. They'll do it. Well, I think Craig or Graham, you're just suppressing your memories. That's how come the method of getting a confession is very, very important. If they do wrong, the whole, just like they did with Amanda Knox, they threw it out because all of their evidence against her was circumstantial. It was all stacked against her. I don't know if she's guilty or innocent, but she's innocent on the fact of technicalities. They could not prove that she had murdered him, so they have to let her go. And I'm all for that. Praise God. Do you understand what I'm saying? Everybody said, they let a murderer go. Are you sure? I'm not sure. Okay? And you've got to stand on the fact that we've been through this type of time history where justice was so perverted, we need to have true justice. And the only true justice comes from the Bible, and Christ shows us how justice ought to be. It also shows us how we have to endure when justice is not right. Deception. Now, execution. The church never, underline these words, the church never actually executed anyone. Ah, phew. So they're not responsible. Right. You know, I never beat up anybody. I just got a bully to do it for me. Hey, Clifford, go beat him up. It's just how, that's, I don't have to get my hands dirty. Once condemned by the tribunal, the prisoner was turned over to the civil authorities for the execution of the sentence. Naturally, magistrates and civil rulers were threatened with excommunication if they did not perform their duty. Catholic Church had ultimate control, but the government did the burning. Unyielding heretics. Death by burning at the stake. Often the condemned was left in prison for a considerable time to add to his torment. Repentant heretics were offered death by strangulation and then burning at the stake. On some occasions, a recantation might commute the death penalty to life imprisonment. Not very often, but it did happen. Coupled with the sentences of death or life imprisonment, the accused had all his personal property confiscated. You lost everything. If you were accused, you've already lost everything. And today, it almost is there. You almost cannot reclaim your innocence. And I hate that. Because, listen, the more you try to serve God, the more likely you are going to be destroyed.
Because listening, there was a guy, a cafe in Birmingham.
Oh, he has a Christian. It's a Christian cafe.
Yeah, he was. Two police went in, told him to take the Bible verses off of his sunscreen. It was a hate crime.
Of course it was. It was. It was awful what he was doing.
So actually, he's
having a verse up there. God so loved the world. That's a hateful verse.
So anyway, it's still ongoing anyway, because they apologized for some part of their involvement with him, but he wants to take it to court.
There was a family who was a Christian family who was a foster parents, and they wrote on there, we're born again Christians, we believe the Bible, da-da. And then one arrogant jerk of a social worker asked, well, are you teaching your children to accept homosexuals? No, we do not teach them. We teach them that homosexuals are sinners that need to be saved. They took the kids that they were in their care off of them. They put their names in the newspaper. This couple they're abusing. I mean, they use words, emotionally abusing children. It ruined their lives. There's another couple who owned a house. This is all over in England. Owned a B&B. And they saw two guys come in hand, drooling over each other. And he says, sorry, listen, there are plenty of places, go on down. But no, we won't open our doors to you. This is our home. Hello, we don't have to take you. They took it to court. They lost their home.
They lost their home.
Wow.
Because of a simple conviction, sorry, I'm not going to let some queer come into my home that we bought and that we allow people to come in. And stay in. Yeah, we're making money, but I don't have to allow perverts, murderers, anybody into my house. I can say, we refuse, but not anymore. And if you do, you've lost it. You're guilty, and then you're destroyed. Okay? Okay, quickly, influencing factors to the 16th century. The Reformation was followed by 100 years of wars. It was a period of religious and political turmoil, with several forces, dominant forces at work, eventually giving shape to our modern Europe. The religious factors, Protestants, and thankfully they had protectors against the attacks of the Catholics, and there was Catholics that had alliances with kings. So there was a lot of battles between noblemen and princes who became Protestants against kings who were still Catholic. Political factors. France, the House of Valois, and the Empire, the House of Habsburg, both of them were Catholic, but political factors, they wanted control. International factors, the Ottoman Empire, the Balkans, Hungary, Transylvania, and Moldova were all doors of Vienna. And leading up, boy, it's still, you don't realize, but World War I was the effect of the attitude that goes back 400 years against each other. The Catholic countries that became Protestant and the Protestant countries, they saw each nation as absolute enemies. And when the Prince of Austria was killed, that was the World War I, that was the last straw, and World War I exploded. And World War I didn't end until 1945. Because World War II was the finishing of World War I. It wasn't finished at the Treaty of Versailles. 30 Years' War, an agreement between Lutherans and the Catholics stating that religion of the people shall be that of their... that was their compromise. They said, look, if the prince wants to be Catholic, then the people have to be Catholic. If the prince wants to be Protestant, the people... So the people prayed for the prince to become Protestant or Catholic, because that was the only way.
People moved about to where they wanted to be then?
If they were allowed. But most of them is poverty. You couldn't just go and buy a plot of land or set up. It was just like here, where to hell or Connacht. When you went up to Connacht, there was no land. I mean, where was the place you were going to build your house or plant it? It was all the barren. That's all it, you know? Ferdinand II, he was a Habsburg ruler, and influenced and educated by Jesuits. He was Austria almost became Protestant under his Counter-Reformation. Archduke of Syria and then Emperor tried to exterminate the Protestants through strict conformity of the Treaty of Augsburg. Maximilian of Bavaria, same as above, except he, as a Protestant, was in Germany trying to get Germany unified under Protestantism. The Protestant Union and the Catholic League. You ever hear of the Catholic League? You hear that around.
Yeah. It's still around, isn't it?
It is still around. Alarmed by the threatenings of Ferdinand and Maximilian, several Protestant princes formed an alliance for their protection called the Evangelical Union. Roman Catholic princes countered by forming their own Catholic League. The Bohemian conflict, all of these are just, there's just so much to look at. Ferdinand, as emperor, began persecuting his subjects in Bohemia, resulting in rebellion against him in 1618. War broke out, Catholic armies won. Bohemia now became the Czech Republic. That's where it is. It was Catholic until it was overrun by the by Russia. The Peace of Westphalia, last point, in 1634, a stalemate was reached. It basically established the borders of Catholic and Protestant lands and property. So 1634 is kind of a big date where you're able to say Europe finally settles down. This is a Catholic country. This is a Protestant country. And they didn't change after that. Okay? All right. Any questions? We got to stop.